You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
You know, Hunter, right now, by the way, this is Brett hosting the Minnesota Progressive Repartee along with Hunter. I don't know if I have any of those three things that are mentioned in the open.
Yeah.
I have a beard occasionally, but it's not, I guess, qualified as a long beard. You don't either. You at least got a little mustache going, though, but that's not quite the hipster thing. Long hair, you at least got the long hair going. I haven't really tried lutefisk very much, and lattes, not a big fan of lattes either. So
I don't mind lattes.
Yeah, you're a latte fan?
All right, sure.
So we kind of fit in, I guess. The long hair helps on your part, at least. I got to grow mine out a little bit. Although when I grow my hair out, it just kind of looks like a mullet, so I'm going to probably stay away from doing that.
Kenny Powers look.
Yeah, the Kenny Powers look. So you got Brett and Hunter hosting the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on this Thursday afternoon. Doug Padgett should be back tomorrow for his regularly scheduled Friday appearance. I believe he'll be speaking with Richard Painter and his other usual Friday guest, astrophysicist Paul Wallace. I know Brad in Robbinsdale is a big fan of the that segment. Sam, our other producer here at the station, I know is also a big fan of that segment as well. So glad to have Doug back. Hopefully he will have successfully overthrown the DNC over in Los Angeles. I know you said that was the only stipulation in which you would fill in for him.
Yeah.
Which was on, what was it?
Monday.
Monday you filled in for him. Yes. Well, of course, Wednesday's your normal day you host anyways, but that was your only stipulation. And I kind of agree with you there too. It's a lot of work to fill in twice a week.
And we'll see if Doug came through with it.
I'm kind of hoping he does because I wasn't planning on talking about this today, but now that we got into the conversation, got to bring this up. This isn't necessarily the DNC, but it's certainly related. This is the DCCC, or the D-Trip. That is the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. That's, of course, exactly what the name says. It's in charge of getting Democrats elected and reelected to the U.S. House of Representatives. And they've done something that has really not been very popular with a lot of progressives in the party and also outside the party. The DCCC announced last Friday that it will not hire any private political vendors that provide services to Democratic primary challengers, and it will discourage individual House Democrats from doing so as well. The news and the show of support from outside groups had an impact. This is actually Mary Newman I should bring up first. She is someone who's challenging Dan Lipinski in Illinois' 3rd Congressional District. This little strategy from the DCCC to try to encourage people to not donate to primary challengers is actually kind of backfired, as she's actually quadrupled her fundraising since that announcement, raising $44,000. But what are you doing, DCCC? I mean, most of your incumbents, if they're a halfway decent candidate, they're going to get through the primary challenge anyways. This just seems like a thing that's targeted at someone like AOC, or I'm trying to think of who else successfully won primary challenges, but it just goes back to why I think the Democrats had such a lack of success, specifically going back to 2014 and 2010, where it was all about being very centrist and all about fundraising. Apparently, we haven't quite learned our lesson from that, as they're going to kind of double down on this strategy and really try to prevent any primary challengers, which is not good for the party at all. And it just really rubs people the wrong way. Of course, they responded to this article, which was written by Reuters, saying, well, it also protects people like AOC now that she's in Congress. So they're trying to say, well, it's not just targeted at progressives, but you and I know that's pretty much the case. So, yeah, not good there. So apparently, if you donate, if you're a vendor and you donate to a primary challenger, you're no longer allowed in the DCCC. Let's turn to some local news before we get into some other topics. Locally, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, I've finally learned how to pronounce his name. It's Buttigieg, if you can't really say it very well, or I kind of think of it as saying Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg, there you go. Kind of easy to say. He's in town today in Minneapolis.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he is coming to town, and he is going to be speaking at the Fine Line Music Cafe in Minneapolis tonight at 8 o'clock. We're going to talk more about Pete Buttigieg later in the program, because I want to expand later in the program on a conversation you and I were having back on Monday about affordable housing, because Yeah, it really got me thinking about this, Hunter, when you were bringing up what's happening in your community in Chaska with trying to get that homeless shelter built in an area where you live, that even though the economy is supposedly strong right now, I feel like we're on the verge of having a real housing crisis, which I think would be very different than the 2008 housing crisis. Or, you know, the 2008 housing crisis, I felt, was more with home ownership. I feel like we could have another housing crisis on our hands, but this time more in the area of renters and low-income housing and even middle-income housing. So I want to talk more about that and what Pete Buttigieg did when he was mayor of South Bend. Well, I guess he technically still is the mayor of South Bend, when he revitalized the community, but also at the expense of some people who are from the minority community in South Bend. He has a little bit of a mixed record on that and even admitted that he made some mistakes when he went through what he did. So we're going to talk about that later in the show. But let's look at some other local news. Unfortunately, it looks like the gas tax increase will not be happening, as yesterday the Republican-led Minnesota State Senate rejected a plan from Governor Tim Walz to raise the state's gasoline tax by 20 cents. The current 28.6 cent tax on every gallon, it raises about a little less than $1 billion. It's $925 million to be exact. But unfortunately, even at that, it's still not enough to sustain Minnesota's vast transportation system. Now, I don't know if you and Eric brought this up, because you were telling me, I think last week, you guys got into an extensive conversation about the gas tax. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of people that wanted to call in and talk about that. And I think this is something that gets missed in the gas tax debate, and I'm sure you guys probably covered this, but the state constitution specifically says the gas tax can only go to roads and bridges.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the motor vehicle tax money goes into the highway user tax distribution fund. And then the state divides that money between highways, county roads, city streets, and local bridges. The gas tax does not, again, does not pay for light rail transit or for buses. That's a separate sales tax in the metro area. And an important distinction, because there's a lot of misinformation about there about raising the gas tax, saying we're going to pay for more bike trails and light rail trains, when that's not the case at all. It's 100% for roads and bridges. So unfortunately, it looks like that probably won't happen during this legislative session, which is too bad, because we have lots of roads, especially in rural parts of the state, that really could use some repair. So it looks like that's not going to happen during this legislative session. Now, I want to switch gears to more of a national issue right now, and this is something I'm kind of familiar with, and it has to do with disability benefits. I don't receive any of these personally, but I have a lot of friends who do, and there is an ugly proposal being brought forth by the Trump administration, and it's kind of downright creepy as well when you think about it. So, in a bid to cut down on fraud within the Social Security Disability Benefits Program, the Trump administration has floated a proposal that would see that the federal government monitors the social media profiles of Americans receiving disability benefits and possibly yanking those benefits if disabled Americans seem to be living a life a bit too fully. That's just creepy. They're essentially going to monitor your social media accounts to make sure that you are not too happy if you're a disabled person. Otherwise, they're going to cut your funding, which seems to go against that whole don't tread on me thing that a lot of Republicans and libertarians like to throw out there. And of course, there's numerous problems with that. First of all, the big government intruding on your personal life, but there's also this as well. Obviously, anyone who's on social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, will usually paint a happier picture of their life than they actually are living. So if you post something like maybe you had a good time, maybe you were playing a sport and you're disabled, well, the federal government could technically monitor you and say, nope, doesn't look like you should be receiving those benefits, and they can immediately cut that. So this is a really ugly thing that's being proposed by the Trump administration. They're trying to get this through. I hope this does not, because that is just weird. I don't want anyone, whether it's Stephen Miller or whoever else, it probably wouldn't be him personally, obviously, but I don't want anyone from the Trump administration monitoring anyone's social media profiles to see if you should qualify for benefits. That just comes off as really, really creepy. There's, of course, other issues with disability benefits as well, and this is another issue I wanted to talk about with this, and this is being kind of exacerbated by the Trump administration, but has really been in place for a long time, even before him, even going back to the Obama administration, Bush and Clinton. And it's a weird thing when receiving disability benefits, because if you technically have too much money in your savings account, you can actually get your benefits cut, which is just crazy. So being blind or disabled can, of course, be expensive, but one big problem disabled people have, this is from Reuters, is being able to save money, because if you have too much again, you can actually have your SNAP or your SSI cut. Same with Medicaid benefits, which are usually only available with financial assets of $2,000 or less. And when I first learned about this, probably about 10 or 15 years ago, when I was talking with a buddy of mine who's in a chair who just graduated from high school, he was saying, I have this money and I have to spend it. Not because he's reckless and just wants to, you know, burn a hole in his pocketbook, but because he literally had to spend that money or he would lose his benefits that he's receiving from the government. So that just seems kind of crazy to me. And people have even gone to the lengths of having their parents set up savings accounts so disabled people can actually have a way to save money. Because again, technically, if they have roughly more than $2,000 in their savings account, they lose their money. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And again, that's something that goes beyond the Trump administration. It's also happened when Democrats have been in charge as well. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Going to take an early break here on AM 950, but when we come back, I want to talk more about this affordable housing crisis, because Hunter, you and I thought got into a great discussion about this on Monday, and I really want to continue this and take a look at how we can use this in 2020 as an election issue against President Donald Trump. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, this is Representative Raymond Dean, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is having their annual service special. Every stove, insert, and fireplace needs maintenance. Get it done now and save $40. You'll be ready to fire up before the cold weather hits again. From 94, take the Riverside Avenue exit and go east to 2901 Franklin Avenue. See the Twin Cities' most diverse selection of clean-burning, reliable, and environmentally smart stoves and fireplaces.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, owner of Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Have you ever watched your dog or cat curl up in front of a fire, like a Norman Rockwell painting brought to life? It's primordial the way fire touches both the animal and the human. We have the equipment and the know-how to supply, install, and maintain stoves and fireplaces. Call us at 612-338-6606 and take advantage of our spring cleaning and maintenance special. We are online at woodlandstoves.com. The mission and the passion of Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is to make the fire work for you.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
The local advertisers you hear on AM 950 are the lifeblood of the station. If you find yourself regularly tuning in, or if you appreciate the diversity of content we deliver, please take the time to support our advertisers. Even if it's just to thank them for backing AM 950, your voice and support can go a long way. Help keep the station going strong while investing in our local community. Find the complete list of on-air supporters by visiting the advertisers page at am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com.
Better Futures Minnesota is a social enterprise which helps men achieve self-sufficiency and a better future for themselves and their communities. We need your help. By donating time or funds to our cause, you can support us and promote a healthier environment. By hiring our deconstruction crews for your next residential or commercial project, and shopping or donating building materials or appliances to our reuse retail warehouse, you are supporting Better Futures Minnesota and your community. Please visit betterfuturesminnesota.com to learn more.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I've been a craftsman for more than 25 years. My company has been awarded more than 5 national awards for craftsmanship. You won't find somebody who loves their job more than me. I've devoted my life to my family, my craft, my business, and to the people who trust me with their projects. And I'm happier for doing it. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com to learn more.
Total Dog Company has a great rewards program. It's called the Frequent Barker Card. You earn punches on the card based on the amount you spend, one punch for every $10. After you get 12 punches, you can redeem the card for $10 off a purchase. Everything we sell qualifies, so you get points and use points on things you really want. The Frequent Barker Program at Total Dog Company in New Hope, right off of 169 at 9432 36th Avenue North, and at TotalDogCompany.com.
Be an info warrior and ignore everything these Soros puppets say. Hunter, Doug, and Brett spread Obama, globalist, Antifa propaganda. Ignore everything you hear on the Minnesota Progressive Liberty.
Brett and Hunter are on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, spewing Antifa propaganda, according to our buddy Alex Jones, who is running out of platforms. You may have heard during the national newscasts at the top of the hour, he has now been deplatformed on Facebook as well. So, Hunter, you have a good connection with Alex Jones. We're about the only place where he's allowed to, well, kind of broadcast his message.
Yeah, he tries to call in sometimes. Our airwaves, because, you can't find Alex on many platforms these days.
Yeah, we do try to at least restrict it somewhat to that one-liner, and I think you allowed him to have one interview on your show where it sounded like he was in studio, or maybe that was just a really good Skype connection. I'm not sure, but he is off Facebook, among others, including Laura Loomer also got banned. She was someone who was just absolutely obsessed with Keith Ellison during the last election cycle.
Right.
Yeah, she was everywhere in Minnesota around that time. She was also the one who perpetuated this false story about Valley Fair of black teenagers that apparently started a riot, even though that completely was not the case. She's been deplatformed, as well as Luis Farrakhan. Remember that name from the Obama years? Yeah, he's also been knocked off Facebook as well. Kind of funny with the whole thing, too, because some people I've seen on the comments section are saying that they're violating our free speech. Well, Facebook is technically a private company, so they can actually do that. They're not a government-run organization. If they were a government-run organization, well, then that would be a little bit of a different case. Although I think some people might make the argument they basically are with how big Facebook is at this point. But anyways, Alex Jones, you won't be able to find him on Facebook anymore. I didn't even know he was on Facebook.
I didn't either.
I thought he already had been deplatformed from pretty much everywhere. I know Twitter kicked him off, as well as YouTube and just about everywhere else. I don't think he was on Instagram. That would be a really weird Instagram account to follow anyways with Alex Jones. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you have any thoughts on what we were talking about with the gas tax or disability benefits, maybe you have some experience with that and want to tell us about that. Love to take your calls here at AM 950. And in fact, before we move on to our conversation about affordable housing, which I think will take up most of the rest of the hour, first up, let's go to Rich, who is in, I believe, Tempe, Arizona, who wants to chime in on disability benefits. Hey there, Rich.
Well, I want to comment. I finally found in my paperwork here a law that was passed here in Arizona a while ago called az-able.com is where people allow people to invest at least $15,000 a year without losing government benefits like access, which is Medicaid, SSI, or SSDI. So we get a program here in Arizona where it's accomplished what you were calling about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. At least that's happening. So this is only in the state of Arizona, correct?
Yeah, law was passed a couple years or so ago. You can check it out, az-able.com.
Well, maybe, Arizona, maybe a model we have to follow there here in the state of Minnesota and the rest of the country where you can at least have more than a couple thousand dollars in your account. But if I heard you correctly, Rich, you were saying you actually have to actually invest this money, or what were the...
No. It says, are made possible by achieving a better life experience that allows individuals with disabilities the ability to save and invest at least $15,000 a year without losing government benefits like Medicaid, SSI, or SDI.
Glad to hear that. So that's really good, too, that you can even have that money in your savings account. I thought originally you had said you had to invest that money. But, yeah, if you can just have that in your savings account, sounds like certainly a step in the right direction. Hey, Rich, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to us on the TuneIn app, KTNF, in the App Store. Just search, or actually I should say, go to the App Store, search for TuneIn. Then when you get the TuneIn app, then you search in favor KTNF, and you'll be able to listen to us just like Rich did over in Tempe, Arizona. We have a lot of callers from around the country, which I think is really cool here on AM 950 in the wake of a lot of progressive radio stations that have unfortunately closed. And this is an entirely different conversation. A lot of progressive stations have closed, not because they're not making money, but because there's a shortage of content, which is just really, really weird. That's the first time I've heard of that ever in the radio industry, a station closing because they did not have enough content. Yeah. I believe that was one out in New York. So a lot of people that don't have their progressive sources anymore do listen to AM 950 through streaming it on the TuneIn app or on our website, am950radio.com, just like Rich did in Tempe, Arizona. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So let's move on to affordable housing, a topic we discussed a little bit on Monday on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee when Hunter was hosting, and Hunter and I were kind of in the reverse position. I was board hopping. Hunter was here in the studio. And Hunter, you were telling us about how you live in the city of Chaska, and they're trying to build a homeless shelter right by where you live. But of course, a lot of people are opposed to that, saying that it's going to lower their property values and increase crime. Fill us in one more time. When's that meeting with the city council to decide whether they're going to do this or not?
It's next Wednesday, May 8th at the Chaska City Council at 7 p.m.
Okay. So yeah, good luck with that. I know you have a powerful story that will hopefully change some minds over there. But it got me thinking a little bit more, especially as we got into a conversation about luxury apartments, which are just weird to me, but I did a little research on them and started to kind of figure out how they can actually be mostly vacant and still yet make some money. But first, before we dive into that, we're going to take a little bit of a humorous look at it. And this is some news I've been seeing float around for a little while. And it is a kind of millennial bashing story, which I know always kind of draws the ire of me and especially you in there, Hunter. And here is the trend, apparently, for millennials. This is according to the Wall Street Journal, one of their recent headlines. Millennials are opting for all-in-one co-living situations. Also, the Business Insider says millennials are paying $40 a night to live in tiny pods. So basically what this is, if you're not familiar with what co-living is or pod sharing, it's basically just a giant warehouse with a bunch of bunk beds. So you basically have like 38 roommates in one giant room. You have shared bathrooms, shared kitchens. You have a certain lights out time. They don't allow physical contact for obvious reasons. And basically there's no private rooms. So it's kind of like a college dorm, or maybe more accurately described as like a summer camp. Or in other words, if you're an introvert, it's kind of like hell on earth. If you basically have no privacy whatsoever. But apparently pod sharing is a thing, and people are saying it's popular with millennials because they love having experiences. They don't want to own. They don't want to rent. They just want to have experiences throughout their life. This is actually from the PodShare website, who is one of the big distributors of this co-living situation. They're really big in Los Angeles, and I think they're trying to expand to San Francisco and Seattle. Millennials don't own a gym at home. They buy a membership. They don't subscribe to cable television. They watch Netflix. They don't buy used CDs. They stream music. American car sales are on the decline because millennials like Lyft and Uber. They can rent a bicycle, get a degree online, have their meals delivered to us, and document their entire lives on social media. They make decisions based on trust and value and price point, and that's why they love pod sharing. So I think this kind of misses the entire point on why a lot of people are turning to pod share, especially in cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco, where prices are just crazy. It's because they can't afford anything else. I think they're trying to almost romanticize this whole idea of pod sharing. What do you think, Hunter?
So I'm on the pod sharing website.
Isn't it just weird?
Yeah, the thing that I just noticed is they have all these pictures of people who have gotten their logo tattooed, and I'm like, what is that? This is like some dystopian future landscape, like looking through this website.
Yeah, and what's crazy too, and this is going to be related to our affordable housing discussion that we're going to have right now, and it's $40 a night, which if you do the math on that, $40 a night times roughly 30 days in a month, you're still paying $1,200, which, of course, is a lot here in Minnesota, and that's a little bit cheaper in places like L.A. and San Francisco. But even there, that's still a lot of money. So you're not exactly getting a good bang for your buck by living in these pod situations. But that's what people are having to turn to because there's such a lack of affordable housing in metropolitan areas throughout the country. So that kind of got me thinking that I think we're on the verge of a crisis with affordable housing in this country. And I want to relate it to Donald Trump and the 2020 campaign, because for a while we've been hearing that the economy's doing great in this country. Unemployment is at some of its lowest points. The U.S. economy grew by a surprising 3.2% during the first quarter. And now the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 30% higher than it was when Trump took office. Although if you look deeper into that, it's actually been stagnant over the past year. So it looks like the economy is technically doing well, but yet we have so many people that can't afford to live in places where they want to live or really afford a one-bedroom apartment at that. You have people getting roommates or, as we're talking about here, doing these goofy pod share things. And as you said, getting tattoos as well.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, that's just creepy. But that's what people are having to turn to because housing is not affordable, even though we have technically a very strong economy. So that kind of got me thinking, because Donald Trump in 2020 is going to completely campaign on the economy. And unless we have a recession over the next year and a half, he's going to be able to use that as his biggest campaign weapon. So how do you campaign against someone like Donald Trump in 2020 when, on the surface, the economy appears to be doing really well? So I would argue we're only kind of looking at the partial equation when we look at how the U.S. economy grew at 3.2% in the first quarter, you know, the Dow Jones being up, and then also having low unemployment. So while people do technically have jobs and are making wages, they aren't keeping up with inflation and rising expenses in two major areas. Obviously, housing is one of them, and the other one, which we're not going to dive into in quite as much detail today, that is, of course, health insurance. Health insurance, of course, has been rising for years and years, even well before Obamacare. Health insurance was well on the rise with very high premiums. In fact, before Obamacare, I believe that was the leading reason why people went into bankruptcy. So obviously, health insurance is one of them. Then, of course, housing is another reason why people are having rising expenses that's not keeping up with inflation or a rise in wages. So we're going to talk more about this in just a second. We're going to look at some data and what some of the candidates have proposed in 2020 on how to deal with this crisis of affordable housing. That's on the way next. It's Brett and Hunter on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, Minnesota. It's Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Spring has sprung, and it's time for Standard Heating and Air Conditioning Spring Fever Sale, where you can save $1,700 or more on a new furnace and AC combo throughout May. We all love being outside in spring, but we have to come in sooner or later, hopefully later. And Standard will make sure you're ready. So find out more about Standard's Spring Fever Sale and how you can save $1,700 or more today at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
I'm Richie Mann with Sitka Salmon Shares, a CSF, or community-supported fishery. The expression, know your farmer, is a familiar concept in the Midwest, yet know your fisherman somehow gets lost in our grocery stores, fish counters, and freezers. Industrialization has broken that connection between fisherman and consumer. Sitka Salmon Shares is reforging that connection through a sustainable, community-driven model. The world's wild fisheries depend on it. Sitka Salmon Shares creates a direct line from our small boat fishermen right to your door. Learn more at sitkasalmonshares.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Metz inviting you to listen to my radio show, The Wall of Power Radio Hour, every weekend on AM 950. We feature cool people from all walks of life and from all 50 states. In 4.5 years, we have featured musicians, actors, politicians, homicide cops, record stores, Metz documentaries, Bob Dylan's first drummer, and more. Every weekend on AM 950, 6 p.m. on Saturday, 4 p.m. on Sunday.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Catch New Beginnings with Freddie Bell, Saturdays at 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Tonight, mostly clear with low around 37. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 63, and Saturday, sunny with a high near 70. Mother Earth Gardens, organic gardening supplies and support. Women-owned and independent. Unique in an era where many independent garden centers are closing. They have a huge organic veggie selection on a small urban lot. So visit MotherEarthGarden.com. Again, that's MotherEarthGarden.com.
Hi, this is Paul Metza from the Wallow Power Radio Hour. You are about to hear my buddies, the Cool Cats, Hunter, Doug, and Brett, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Tune in and check those dudes out.
And you are listening to the Cool Cats today. It is Brett Johnson and Hunter Haas on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, talking about affordable housing and also how does that jive with having what's on the surface is supposed to be a very strong economy? Because heading into 2020, that's what we're going to see as an election theme from the Donald Trump campaign, is saying, hey, we have a strong economy. You should reelect me and send me back in. But is that really the case? Because it's only looking really at one part of the economy when you look at high GDP, a low unemployment rate, the Dow Jones Industrial Average sort of doing well. Again, it hasn't been doing that well over the past year or so, but it has risen since Trump took office. But I think it's only looking at one side of the equation, because there's a revenue. Well, let's go back. Let's take a step back. So I'm a former accountant, so I love kind of doing these things where you look at revenue and expenses and income. So to get your income, you do revenue minus expenses, and then you have your income. So when we look at the economy as a whole and say, well, it looks to like be doing really well, I think we're only looking at the revenue side of the economy when we see people that technically have jobs, they're making money, and they are kind of getting by. But I think it kind of misses looking at another part, which is the expense side and how much money people are paying for health insurance and then also housing, because those are two major issues and reasons why people, even though the economy's technically strong, maybe aren't doing as well as they probably could, and why this so-called economic boom is not necessarily affecting everyone. So let's look at rent right now. So according to Rent Cafe, over the last 10 years, the average rent for a one-bedroom apartment has gone up by 30%. 30%. Wages obviously have not kept up with that. Back in 2009, the average rent from a one-bedroom apartment was $1,050. Now it is $1,361, which is a little over 30% of a rent increase. Also looking at the average one-bedroom rent for different states around the country, this one I found kind of interesting. Minnesota actually has the highest rent for a one-bedroom apartment of any state in the Midwest, and that includes states that also have big cities like Illinois, Ohio, and Michigan. We have the highest rent of any state for a one-bedroom apartment. I would not have expected that. I thought at least Illinois or even Michigan would have been ahead of us there, having big cities like Chicago and Detroit. But the average one-bedroom apartment in Minnesota costs $1,050. So what do you do with this? Because, again, the economy supposedly is doing well, but people are running into situations where they can't afford their rent. There's a lack of affordable housing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take your calls on that in just a moment. So what's being done to address this? Well, let's look at the Trump administration first. Well, they are actually proposing cutting HUD by an astounding $9.6 billion or 18% below the 2019 enacted levels. And it's really the lower and middle income renters who are going to be not getting those subsidies that they are now to be able to afford their places. But this kind of goes to a larger issue, and I kind of want your thoughts on this too, Hunter. I feel like we're even kind of missing the right term here, using affordable housing, because at least the picture that kind of comes to mind when I think of affordable housing is people that are getting like Section 8 or getting subsidies, and not necessarily those people that I think are being really affected by this housing crunch. And those are people that aren't getting subsidies but still are not able to afford their rent because it's increasing so much, and we're seeing this rise of luxury apartments. What do you think about that?
I totally agree with you with that assessment, and that affordable housing doesn't really paint the right picture of this.
Yeah, because I just feel like it, when you mention affordable housing to someone, they naturally think of people who live in extreme poverty and are just maybe coming off of homelessness or something like that. They're not really picturing it as your person who maybe makes $30,000 or $40,000 a year and is just barely able to afford their rent. So I feel like we need to kind of maybe rebrand that in some way, because this is something that I feel like is going to eventually explode when the economy does eventually go down. Because right now we're kind of in a situation where the economy, where the rich are doing great and the middle and lower class are, you know, just kind of getting by right now. They're doing okay, but not great. And if the economy crashes, obviously the wealthy are going to be okay. They have investments in stocks. They have great portfolios. But the middle and lower class, I feel like, are really going to feel the pinch when we have our next recession. It's going to be, I think, different than 2008 because, again, 2008, I thought, had more to do with being a homeowner and having subprime mortgages and, well, this is an oversimplification, but getting mortgages that you weren't able to afford. Obviously, there was a lot more with that, with banks doing predatory lending. But I feel like it's going to be very different in the next crisis because we're going to have people who aren't even going to be able to afford rent, which is going to be a big thing during the next possible economic downturn. Love your thoughts on this. How do you deal with this? Because there's no easy solution to this that's either really Democrat or Republican. You can maybe do rent control, but that has the unintended consequence of maybe leading to the rise of more luxury apartments that we see in cities like, well, obviously here in Minneapolis, but especially in Los Angeles or San Francisco. We can talk more about that in just a moment, but first let's go through the phone calls. Let's go to David in Shakopee. Hey there, David, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'm going to talk about something that's not rent control, but if we want to back Trump on something, the farmers just lost $11.8 billion, and he's subsidizing them $12 billion. I guess he's getting some of that from HUD, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a
good point. So if the economy's doing well, then the farmers should be doing well. But he's messed up with the tariffs, and it's affecting them. And when the farmers don't do well, that's going to be a problem for everybody.
All right, thanks so much for the call there, David. Doesn't sound like you have the best connection right now, so we're going to let you go on that. But he brings up another good point with this as well. Obviously, farmers are getting subsidized heavily. And when we talk about this housing crisis, it's not just these urban cities like a Minneapolis or a Los Angeles or San Francisco or even Denver, where you typically see people having to deal with luxury apartments that no one could afford, gentrification. It's also impacting small towns as well, where housing is unaffordable in those areas too. So I think that's a good point to bring up, David, there, and also with farmers too, not necessarily feeling the tailwind of what's supposedly a great economy. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's go to Jim in St. Louis Park. Hi there, Jim.
Hi, I think it's all about supply and demand, provide more affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the Carpenters Union, and we just negotiated a $2 an hour raise every year for the next 3 years. So a little over 2 years from now, I'll be making $6 more an hour. So we have a really good package. But I get mad, you know, when they talk about millennials not wanting to buy. I'm a baby boomer, but millennials just simply cannot afford to buy anything.
Exactly.
And it's also, it's not affordable housing. It's having income. You know, it's, incomes have just not gone up. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to think about affordable housing that people can buy. Because the number one way families build wealth in this country is by buying homes. And there are, the starter homes are all just evaporating. They're going away at this point.
Oh, absolutely. There's really no way you can find a good single family home, at least in the Twin Cities, for what, like under $200,000. Yeah, it's a great point to bring up there, Jim. Yeah, saying, well, millennials don't want to buy anymore. Thanks so much for the call. Yeah, it's because they can't afford it. It's tough to be able to get that down payment, and then you got to afford that mortgage as well. So that's a good point to bring up as well, Jim. And then, of course, you have these, which we talked about on Monday, and they just kind of drive me nuts. Luxury apartments. The rise of gentrification and luxury apartments. So what happens a lot is that you have these kind of rundown buildings that you see in cities, whether they're former office buildings or maybe they're some kind of restaurant or a house or even an old apartment building. They get renovated and then they get turned into these big luxury apartments where you can get a studio apartment of 500 feet for like $1,600. In fact, that's actually how much you can get for a studio apartment at a place I was looking at when we were talking about this the other day. I won't name where, but that's just nuts. 500 foot studio apartment for $1,600. So the question is, how can you raise rent that quickly in these luxury apartments when you have rent controls? Because rent control should technically prevent this from happening. Or even if you don't have rent control, it should technically prevent having unreasonable increases. Well, this is actually from renterpeace.com, where they went into a little bit more detail on how you can kind of build these luxury apartments and how they actually make their money, despite the fact that they have huge amounts of vacancies. So generally, and this is from their article from, again, renterspeace.com, generally, rent control prevents landlords from significantly raising the rent on current tenants. For example, in Washington, D.C., landlords typically cannot raise the rent more than $50 to $100 once a year for every $1,000 of rent. But this is key, and this is true in other cities. But when an apartment is empty, landlords are free to raise the price. So that means it makes sense for landlords who are making renovations or have purchased a building in an up-and-coming neighborhood to have high turnover so they can frequently raise the rent. And I think this really hits home, and that's how they're able to charge these astronomical rents, because they purposely want vacancies so they can charge a higher amount of money. 952-946-6205. Let's go to Jonathan and Crystal as we continue our conversation. Hey there, Jonathan.
Hey there. I had some thoughts about the economy.
Yeah.
And I think the economy, kind of like video games, back in the day, growing up playing like Pac-Man or something, you got 50,000 points. You know, that was considered good. But then they had to push the high score out there up to like 100,000 or a million or 5 million. And so people would feel good about it. But I feel like we're doing that the same thing with the economy. I mean, because we still have the same loaf of bread. We still have everything's still the same, but we keep pushing the cost out. And one thing I'm worried about, like the push for 15, because I'm a part of the push for 15, is that the $15 an hour is going to become the new 7 or the new 4. Mm-hmm. You know, so everything else is going to be pushed out as well. So then you're still in the same boat. And I think we need some. It's going to be like a big overhaul, but we need to do something, because, I mean, then we're going to say, well, now we need like a $50 minimum wage, but they're going to be paying $27 for a loaf of bread or $50 for a loaf of bread. I mean, at what point do we put a stop? Do we put a cap on it? Say, this is just ridiculous. Now we're just throwing out these magical numbers just to make us happy. I don't get why do we go from like 10 cents for this? Now it's like $20 for the same darn thing.
Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for the Thanks so much for the call there, Jonathan. I'm not sure necessarily you'd see prices increase that fast if you were to raise the minimum wage to $15. But I think he does bring up a good point in that you also have to look at, again, at the expense side of the equation, not just the revenue side where you make your money. It's also how you spend your money as well, because if you have prices and costs that outpace the amount of money you're making, obviously that's going to be a problem. So how do we relate this to the Donald Trump 2020 election? Because In 2020, he is going to be a tough candidate to beat if we basically have the same type of economy we have right now, because it's easy for people to look at those numbers and say, well, GDP is doing great. We have a low unemployment rate and the Dow Jones is up. I think this is where you really have to hit Donald Trump at, and any other Republican, saying the economy's not doing great. Look at the cost of housing. No one can afford to even rent a two-bedroom apartment anymore. And talking about the millennials, I believe it was Jim who was bringing that up a moment ago. You can't afford a starter home anymore. You could maybe afford a second or third home, or buying your second or third home if you already own, but it's people who are looking for that starter home. It's very unaffordable at this point. So I think that's really an issue you could kind of harp on Donald Trump with in the 2020 election, saying that, yeah, while the economy supposedly is doing great, it's very unaffordable for people who are very middle or lower class. So before we head to the break, I want to take a look at what some of the 2020 Democratic candidates are doing with the affordable housing crisis, because it's something that really doesn't get a lot of play in the media, but there was a nice breakdown on what some of the candidates have proposed to try to help people find affordable housing. And the San Jose, what was the name of the subscription again? The San Jose Mercury News made a nice little summary about what some of the candidates have proposed to try to help with rent control and also help with making homes more affordable. So Senator Kamala Harris has the Rent Relief Act, which would give renters who pay more than 30% of their income in rent a tax credit with limits based on income and the local fair market rent. That's kind of a meh from me. I'm not sure if that's really going to do a whole lot, because I'm afraid, yeah, you're just going to see rent increase again if they get their, if people end up getting just a tax credit. Senator Cory Booker is kind of proposing the same thing, but with a few more caveats. He wants to give renters who again pay more than 30% of their income in rent a tax credit with limits based on their local fair market rent. And he would also require cities to submit strategies to reform zoning laws in order to continue receiving grants. And he would also set up a rainy day fund, letting taxpayers delay receiving their tax refund and earn income on it. So that's kind of up the whole moderate Democrat solution, where it kind of deals with a problem similar to Obamacare. I mean, it's better than nothing, but I don't feel it really quite goes far enough. And then we have Senator Elizabeth Warren. She wants to invest in building new affordable housing, mostly by sending money to state housing agencies. She would incentivize cities to reform zoning laws by creating new grants. Some of the other provisions she would have would be a down payment assistance program for home buyers in formerly what are called redlined neighborhoods. So I think she's a little bit more on the right track there. And it's kind of interesting to look at this too, because we do have three candidates in the 2020 race who are former mayors who have dealt directly with this crisis. Mayor Pete Buttigieg did this whole thing, which was called 1,000 Homes in 1,000 Days, where he tried to build new affordable housing homes within 1,000 days. He was able to do that, but it actually kind of came at a cost, where they actually ended up demolishing some homes that were actually in the minority community of South Bend, Indiana. And then we have Bernie Sanders, who a lot of people forgot was actually the mayor of Burlington, Vermont. He started the Champlin Housing Trust, which was the first of its kind to ensure poor and working people in the town would always have somewhere affordable to live. In fact, he even sued the cable company and got everybody cheaper cable, and he rejected a plan to redevelop waterfront property into condos, hotels, and offices. Instead, he made the land into parks and office space. So kind of interesting history on some of the candidates that have been mayors that have had to deal directly with this. Sanders, Buttigieg, and Booker, the former mayors that are now running for president. A few minutes left on the show. We'll talk more about this and get into a few pieces of miscellaneous news stories on the way next. It's Brett and Hunter on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Yeah, this is Karen Olson Johnson from Connections Radio, and you are listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
At Mother Earth Gardens, we've been selling heirloom and open pollinated plants for your backyard homestead since 1994. We research our products and we handpick every pot, trellis, and gift. So if you love 50-plus varieties of tomatoes, native planting for pollinators, and a shocking variety of annuals and perennials, make the journey to one of our two locations, South Minneapolis across from the Riverview Theater and Northeast at Stinson and Lowry. Small footprint, surprising selection. MotherEarthGarden.com.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
pour me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson, and you're listening to Doug, Brent Hunter, and Eric on Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
And you got Brett and Hunter on the repartee today. So what do we do with affordable housing? Should we even call it affordable housing? I don't know if there's many easy solutions to this, because a lot of times people like to point to rent control, but sometimes that has the unintended consequence of building even more luxury apartments, because landlords will just decide to flip an entire building rather than actually try to conform with these rent control guidelines. And then a few more pieces of miscellaneous news before we wrap up the show that does not have to do with affordable housing. And someone has reared his ugly head. A former politician, Eric Paulson, is back. Apparently, Eric Paulson is going to be joining a lobbying group that's going to try to get the USMCA passed, which is a replacement for NAFTA. And no surprise here, Eric Paulson is going to be working with this corporate-funded group to try to get this thing passed. So thought Eric Paulson would go away. Nope, he's still rearing his ugly head. Although, when they interviewed him in the Star Tribune, no comment about running in 2020. I think his political career is pretty much over. And one final piece of news, the National Women's Hockey League. The Minnesota Whitecaps won the championship this past year in their first year in existence, but a lot of women who are in this league saying they're not going to play next season because they think the $2,500 a year is not a high enough wage to play, which is definitely not. You can't really live on that. You have to have a full-time job outside of it. But it's kind of funny seeing some of the comments flood in from men, saying, well, if the money isn't there, they shouldn't have their league subsidized if they're not getting enough ticket sales, which is kind of funny, because then you look at men's professional sports and the Vikings and the Twins and any other pro sports teams that gets how many millions of dollars from their stadiums being funded. So yeah, they're certainly getting subsidized as well. It's Brett and Hunter on the repartee. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.